Well, welcome again to our study for today, little children. It's February 10th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time, look at this, is 1914 hours Eastern Standard Time. You couldn't plan it better than that. I didn't plan it. Jehovah did, maybe he planned it. We don't know much about Jehovah, that's for sure. One thing we do know is that he's not with the braggarts and the ones who are making a big display, but he's with those who are in silence, who suffer. He's with those people. And the Egyptian king, now this is from paragraph 8, I believe it is. It's the second paragraph of the second section within the Arabian tradition inset in the article Crucible of Credible Creed, or C-cubed, as we sometimes call it. It's an article from 2012, I believe. It was first published when it was, at that time, first published. Now, the second, under the heading Exodus in the Arabian tradition inset, the second paragraph within that heading tells us that the Egyptian king of the time of Joseph, this is amazing, named Ryan, in the Arabian tradition, in their language. This is incredible. He's said to have flourished 400 years before the day of Moses. Okay, this is consistent with 400 years of affliction, which were foretold to Abraham in Genesis 15. We're not going to look it up right now. And with Exodus 12:41, it's also consistent. Which allots the sons of Israel 430 years in all in Egypt. So from Exodus 12:41, 430 years. Also, we're not looking that up right now. We've got a lot of scriptures to read today anyway, or at least a couple of chapters of the Bible. But look at this. Okay, so Genesis 15 and Exodus 12:41. They agree with this 400 years in the Arabian tradition. And, you know, the 400 years of affliction. The other thing is this name Ryan. Okay, so this is a remarkable agreement already, but what about the name Ryan? I was curious about the name Ryan. Well, can we find out whether that name Ryan makes sense? So I looked up what's the throne name of the Pharaoh of Egypt in the time of Joseph. He's the one we're talking about. During the time of Joseph, the king in our genealogy, or our chronology, which we really thought is, and we believe it from many, many angles, that this is the right time period for Joseph, and it's the Pharaoh Amenemhat II. It's just, I might have to cough here. It's just something, it's a tickle or something in my throat. It's probably a reaction to something that I get, reaction to, well, it could be a reaction to xylitol that I get some, a little bit of reaction sometimes. Sometimes I react to the calcium, even in eggs, or whatever's in the eggs. I get it from dairy as well. But it's not a serious thing. It's a cough, and then, it's, you know, I'm fine. One cough. Look at this, praenomen. The throne name is the praenomen, okay, for the pharaoh. So we look at the praenomen. There it is there. We go across, Nebuchadre. But it means, that's the Egyptian word, Nebuchadre. We don't know how to pronounce it exactly, maybe. But it means the souls of Ra are golden. Okay? That's what it means in English. So let's put that into Google Translate and put it into Arabic. And there we have it. The souls of Ra are golden. And we have, that is what it looks like in the Arabian language, Arabic. But let's listen to what it's pronounced like. Does it sound like Ryan?
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
In the middle there, did you hear the word Ryan? I hear something that sounds like Ryan.
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
To me, that sounds like Ryan, so That's amazing.
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
Isn't it amazing? أرواح رعن ذهبية.
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
I don't quite know that za is zahabiyatun. أرواح رعن ذهبية.
أرواح رعن ذهبية.
Which is interesting because there's no N in the word, but it still sounds like أرواح رعن ذهبية. And there seems like there might be other sounds that aren't written that are spoken. But the name Ryan, doesn't it sound like Ryan to you? I just can't believe the unlikelihood of it. And I've probably known this for a long time, but I mean, I've done this before, I believe, but it was a long time ago when I did that, and I didn't actually publish it in that form. I'm incredulous. I can't believe it's such a good correspondence to our timeline and our chronology that we can find a king and translate it to Arabic and have it be pronounced as it was said to be from the Arab tradition, even though we translated it from Egyptian. That's all for our study for today in the Crucible article. I am happy. I hope that is useful to someone, little children. Listen to this now. Our proverb for today, Ecclesiastes 12:7. Then the dust returns to the earth, just as it happened to be, and the spirit itself returns to the true God who gave it. The spirit itself returns to the true God who gave it. That's when we die. Yeah, that's what happens. And that's not to say that we have to die. The other thing is, you know, Jesus said that there would be those who would not die at all. We don't have to die, is what the Bible teaches us. But when we do die, then the dust returns to the earth and the spirit to the true God. We're at the very last chapter of 2 Kings also, which I didn't really notice yesterday. We're in the final chapter of 2 Kings, so we're about to begin 1 Chronicles. But in 2 Kings 25, this is the most, detailed information about the capture of Jerusalem, I think, anywhere in the Bible. This chapter, little ones. So it's interesting. It's important. It's exciting. All of this is exciting to me. And when I began this study, I didn't think it was going to be exciting. I didn't think I would be excited, but I am excited because all of the chronology depends upon all the facts that we can find. And we see here, it says, and it came about in the ninth year of his being king, in the tenth month, on the tenth day of the month, that would be sometime around January, right? The tenth month, starting from springtime, that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came, yes, he and all his military force against Jerusalem, and began camping against it and building against it a siege wall all around. And the city came to be under siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. Yeah. Well, I just noticed, I want to say something. It's interesting that Jordan Peterson, who is a Canadian psychologist, he believes that alcohol is a very destructive thing, just as much as anything, like drugs or anything, could be destructive. And not many people agree with this. I happen to be very sympathetic to his viewpoint, in fact, but I'm very much believing that it's just that alcohol, it's far simpler, first of all, but also that alcohol, it's simpler not to use alcohol. Everything is simpler in the body. But also, I just believe it's a poison. Alcohol is a poison. It doesn't help the health. Even though they claim that wine was good for the health and all that, that was only good for the heart health. It wasn't good for the brain health. So there was a lot to be said for abstaining from wine, but not years and years ago, because back in those days they didn't have all the vitamins and all the nutrients that we can get access to nowadays, and they didn't have refrigerators and so on. So nowadays it's different, but now I mean, apparently the alcohol use accounts for 50% of all the murders and so on. So if I don't think we need to be political, but the problem with alcohol too is that it's like a virus. It spreads, you know. Everybody, you know, tries to induce other people to use it, just like with drugs. It's a bad thing in that sense. And the city came to be under siege until the 11th year of Zedekiah. The 11th year of Zedekiah, just as we've been saying all along. On the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine was severe in the city, and there proved to be no bread for the people of the land. We're going to see talk about wine in Daniel chapter 1. That's one reason for mentioning it too. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind of wine or what kind of alcohol. There's no exception. And also, there's so many wrong things with using wine or alcohol for celebrating and all that. There's so many things wrong with that. Because celebration itself is a waste of time. But yet people do it all the time. They do it for various reasons, all of which are basically wrong because they waste time. On the 9th day of the 4th month, a famine was severe in the city, and there proved to be no bread for the people of the land. You notice they didn't care about wine. They didn't care about any other thing. It was the bread they worried about. Bread was the most important thing, but the only important thing. And the city, it was the only important thing. And the city got to be breached, and all the men of war fled by night and by way of the gate between the double wall that is by the king's garden, while the Chaldeans were all around against the city. And the king began to go in the direction of the Arabah. And I wouldn't say these things about wine if I didn't, or about alcohol, if I didn't care about people. I know it's for our benefit. It's for the good of people if they stay away from alcohol. I know that. And a military force of Chaldeans went chasing after the king. For example, all my music and everything that I ever did was done without alcohol. All of it. Without alcohol or drugs or anything like that. And the military force of the Chaldeans went chasing after the king, and they got to overtake him in the desert plains of Jericho. Okay, we know where Jericho is. It's sort of south. Well, where is it? It must be near. I actually don't know where it is. But we know it's near to the Jordan River, because that's where Joshua and the Israelites came to first after they crossed the Jordan. And it's near Jerusalem too, probably, but they didn't conquer Jerusalem right away. And all his own military force was scattered from his side, meaning Zedekiah, his military force. Then they seized the king, Zedekiah, and brought him up to the king of Babylon at Riblah, that they might pronounce a judicial decision upon him. And Zedekiah's sons they slaughtered before his eyes, and Zedekiah's eyes he blinded, after which he bound him with copper fetters and brought him to Babylon. Wasn't there a prophecy saying he would not see something? He would not see the land of Babylon? Yeah, the land of the Chaldeans he will not see, Ezekiel 12 and 13, Ezekiel prophesied. He will not see the land of the Chaldeans. It he will not see, it says in that prophecy. So that came true because he was blinded before he was brought there. I mean, we don't need to know, but we don't think Nebuchadnezzar necessarily had read the book of Ezekiel before he blinded Zedekiah, but Jehovah's word came true. Anyway, after which he bound him with copper fetters and brought him to Babylon. That's the remarkable thing about God's word. It's prophetic in that it comes true. That's why it's called God's word, I suppose. And in the 5th month, on the 7th day of the month, that is to say the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, okay, 5th month, the 7th day of the month. Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, the servant of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem, and he proceeded to burn the house of Jehovah and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem. And the house of every great man he burned with fire. And the walls of Jerusalem all around, the entire military force of Chaldeans that were with the chief of the bodyguard, pulled down. Verse 11, and the rest of the people that were left behind in the city and the deserters that had gone over to the king of Babylon and the rest of the crowd, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, took into exile. And some of the lowly people of the land, the chief of the bodyguard, let remain as vine dressers and compulsory laborers. And the pillars of copper that were in the house of Jehovah, and the carriages and the copper sea that were in the house of Jehovah, the Chaldeans broke in pieces and went carrying the copper of them to Babylon. We saw where that copper had been, cast in the foundry that was researched south of the Salt Sea. They found the place where Solomon cast all these large copper items, or I'm not sure the correct word, he formed them. They were formed in this big foundry, which we believe they found. The researcher Levy found these things, wrote about them anyway. And the cans and the shovels and the extinguishers and the cups and all the utensils of copper with which they used to minister, they took. And the chief of the bodyguard took the fire holders and the bowls that were of genuine gold and those that were of genuine silver. As for the two pillars, the one sea and the carriages that Solomon had made for the house of Jehovah, there happened to be no way to tell the weight of the copper of all these utensils. 18 cubits was the height of each pillar, and the capital upon it was copper, and the height of the capital was 3 cubits, and the network and the pomegranates all around upon the capital, the whole of it was copper. And the second pillar had the same as these upon the network. Furthermore, the chief of the bodyguard took Sariah, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and 3 doorkeepers, and from the city he took 1 court official that had a command over the men of war. I mean, if we can live forever, we can't live forever if we're corrupting our bodies with something that's not for our benefit, for the benefit of the eternal life of our organisms. So we need to put in only essentials and crucial things into our body, not abusing our body with some other substance that's not essential, which is one of which is alcohol. And if we want to live forever, we mustn't put alcohol into our body any more than we put any drug. It's wrong, plain and simple, for those who are willing to accept it. That's what it is. It's for those who are willing to accept this truth. It's just wrong. And from the city, he took 1 court official that had a command over the men of war, in addition to these other, the priests and the doorkeepers, and 5 men from those having access to the king that were found in the city, and the secretary of the chief of the army, the one mustering the people of the land, and 60 men of the people of the land that were to be found in the city. And Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, then took them and conducted them to the king of Babylon at Riblah. But look what he did in verse 21. And the king of Babylon proceeded to strike them down and put them to death at Riblah in the land of Hamath. Thus Judah went into exile from off its soil. He put them to death. He put them to death. It seems like strong behavior, but Jehovah allowed this. Jehovah allowed this because Israel had committed a lot of atrocity and sin in what they were doing against Jehovah's law. Jehovah's law was only for their own good. It was only, you know, to do with giving them life and allowing them to live as healthy as they could in those days. They didn't have the technology we have today. As for the people left behind in the land of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had left behind, he now appointed over them Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. When all the chiefs of the military forces, they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had appointed Gedaliah, they immediately came to Gedaliah at Mizpah. The book of Jeremiah, and Jeremiah the prophet, writing in that book, talks about this also, and he's the one who wrote the book of Kings too. So he wrote this book of 2 Kings. So, but Jeremiah's book itself, the prophecy of Jeremiah, talked about Gedaliah. And so the chiefs of the military forces immediately came to Gedaliah at Mizpah, verse 23, that is, Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and Johanan, the son of Kareah, and Sariah, the son of Tanhumeth, the Netophathite. And Jaazaniah, the son of the Maacathite, they and their men. Then Gedaliah swore to them. So it was Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, Johanan, the son of Kareah, Sariah, the son of Tanhumeth, the Netophathite, and Jaazaniah, the son of the Maacathite, they and their men. Then Gedaliah swore to them and their men and said to them, "Do not be afraid of being servants to the Chaldeans. Dwell in the land and serve the king of Babylon, and it will go well with you." And it came about in the 7th month that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama of the royal offspring, came, and also 10 men with him. And they got to strike down Gedaliah, so that he died, and also the Jews and the Chaldeans that happened to be with him in Mizpah. They assassinated Gedaliah, evidently because he'd been appointed by the king of Babylon. So, after that, verse 26, all the people from small to great and the chiefs of the military forces rose up and came into Egypt, for they had become afraid because of the Chaldeans. That's where they went to Egypt. Jeremiah mentions that as well, I believe. I recall that. Let's see if I can find it. Jeremiah, there it is. Jeremiah 41 and 17 mentions that they were going to enter into Egypt. They took up dwelling in the lodging place of Kimham in order to go and enter into Egypt, there it said. But that was from Jeremiah, right? Yeah. 41 and 17 of Jeremiah. And, you know, and then it continues. Finally, they came, Jeremiah 43 and 7, into the land of Egypt. So he mentioned that in Jeremiah. And it came about, this is really interesting chronologically, and it's important chronologically. And it came about in the 37th year of the exile of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, in the 12th month, on the 27th day of the month, that Evil-Merodach, the king of Babylon, in the year of his becoming king, raised up the head of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, out of the house of detention, and he began to speak good things with him, and then put his throne higher than the thrones of the kings that were with him in Babylon. And he took off his prison garments, and he ate bread constantly before him all the days of his life, did Jehoiakim. As for his allowance, an allowance was constantly given him from the king, daily as due, all the days of his life. So Jehoiakim, who was the younger king, he was about 18 years old, he ruled for 3 months, I believe, at the age of 18. It's what we learned about him. 18 years old, 2 Kings 24 and 8, when he began to reign, and for 3 months he reigned. But he was taken away, as was Jehoiakim also, by Nebuchadnezzar. He was taken after his father Jehoiakim. And here's what happened to him. You know, we have the chronology, Evil-Merodach, in the year of his becoming king, and he succeeded Nebuchadnezzar. So we know from this, this doesn't tell us he succeeded Nebuchadnezzar, but we know that from other sources. But we know it was 37 years from the time of the exile, which gives us the year, 37 years after 597 is something like 560 year, or 561, the 37th year, sometime around 561 BCE, that's when this happened, when he was released from prison. Let's go now to continue before we run out of time completely. We've got the book of Daniel. We're just starting this book, so our chronology is remarkable, but before we start this, let's take a look at something here for a moment, if we can find it. Yeah, the chronology of the kings, we see that there it was. Josiah was killed. Then his son Jehoahaz was captured by the Egyptian army. And then Jehoiakim was appointed by the Egyptians. And then his son Jehoiakim ruled for 3 months. He's the one we're talking about. And then Zedekiah for 10 years ruled before he was defeated, blinded, and taken to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, as we read today. Daniel, chapter 1, little children. In the third year of the kingship of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and proceeded to lay siege to it. In time, Jehovah gave into his hand Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, and a part of the utensils of the house of the true God. Only a part of the utensils, you see that? So there were more to take in the time of Zedekiah, who came after this. So that he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and the utensils, he brought to the treasure house of his God. He brought these people to Babylon, apparently, Jehoiakim. We don't read much more about it, but we saw from Jeremiah 46:2 that Nebuchadnezzar, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, conquered Berenice at the Euphrates, near the Euphrates at Carchemish, it's called, the name of the place, Carchemish. And that defeat meant that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians were now in charge of everything in Palestine, you know, and that whole surrounding area, all of it, all of the area that the Egyptians had been controlling was now in the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. So this third year mentioned here is probably the same as the fourth year mentioned in Jeremiah 46:2 of Jehoiakim, fourth year, or the year 605. We'll see why that's important, what year it is. And then the king, verse 3, said to Ashpenaz, his chief court official, to bring some of the sons of Israel, and of the royal offspring, and of the nobles, children in whom there was no defect at all, but good in appearance, and having insight into all wisdom, and being acquainted with knowledge, and having discernment of what is known, in whom also there was ability to stand in the palace of the king, and to teach them the writing and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Furthermore, to them the king appointed a daily allowance from the delicacies of the king. And look at this. And from his drinking wine, you see, even to nourish them for 3 years, that at the end of these they might stand before the king. Now, this just means, basically, whenever they ate, they drank wine. That's why they called it drinking wine. But, basically, that's what it's saying, ostensibly. And they thought it was good for the health, drinking wine. That's why they did that. But, of course, we know better. Some of us do nowadays. But they might stand before the king after 3 years of being nourished. Now, there happened to be among them some of the sons of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But, the problem with wine is the alcohol. That's the problem. Okay, Daniel was with these ones that were taken by Nebuchadnezzar, and also Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And to them, the principal court official went assigning names. So he assigned to Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Those were their names assigned. But Daniel determined in his heart that he would not pollute himself with the delicacies of the king and with his drinking wine. To Daniel, the delicacies of the king were pollution, body pollution. It wasn't food that he would eat. And the drinking wine was body pollution to him. It's the alcohol. You know, they would never drink, heavy, strong alcohol either. That would be worse. But even the drinking wine, even that amount of alcohol was just no good. It was unacceptable. And he kept requesting of the principal court official that he might not pollute himself. Accordingly, the true God gave Daniel over to loving kindness and to mercy before the principal court official. So the principal court official said to Daniel, I am in fear of my lord the king, who appointed your food and your drink. Why then should he see your faces dejected looking in comparison with the children who are of the same age as yours? They apparently were drinking wine even as young children or young, fairly young children or young men. And why should you have to make my head guilty to the king? We don't know Daniel's age. But Daniel said to the guardian whom the principal court official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please put your servants to the test for 10 days and let them give us some vegetables that we may eat and water that we may drink, and let our countenances and the countenance of the children who are eating the delicacies of the king appear before you, and according to what you see, do with your servants. Now, something else comes to my mind now, and that is sugar. Nowadays, we have processed sugar. They didn't have that back in those days. Sugar would be, and probably should be, excluded from our diet as an additive. We probably shouldn't add it to anything, but we do. And that's something I'm working on, cleansing my body over a long, long period of time. I've been cleansing my body gradually of a lot of different pollutions. Finally, he listened to them as regards this matter and put them to the test for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, the countenances appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the children that were eating the delicacies of the king. So the guardian kept on taking away their delicacies and their drinking wine and giving them vegetables. As for these children, the four of them, to them the true God gave knowledge and insight in all writing and wisdom. And Daniel himself had understanding in all sorts of visions and dreams. You see, anything that corrupts the mind even a little tiny bit, such as even sugar might do that, but alcohol certainly does corrupt the mind more than a little bit. So they wouldn't have had this knowledge and insight in all writing and wisdom, and Daniel would not ever have been able to gain the understanding in all sorts of visions and dreams if he'd not abstained from alcohol. There's a good reason to do it. And at the end of the days that the king had said to bring them in, the principal court official also proceeded to bring them in before Nebuchadnezzar. He's the king of Babylon. And the king began to speak with them, and out of them all, no one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they continued to stand before the king. And as regards every matter of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired about from them, he even got to find them 10 times better than all the magic practicing priests and the conjurers that were in all his royal realm. And Daniel continued on until the first year of Cyrus the king. We have one minute. Look at that. So it's not a question of, well, it makes a tiny bit of difference if you abstain from wine. That's not what it was. And if you abstain from these other bad, you know, delicacies that they were eating, meats and things that they didn't need. Instead of that, it makes a difference of 10 times better. This small difference makes a difference of 10 times, a factor of 10 better. That's what it says. So you think it might be, some people might claim, or you might even think that, I myself included, might think it's only a small difference. Not so. And you'll know when you see the difference. You only find out the difference when you try it, when you actually try abstaining. Then you see the difference. And you have to be rigorous, and you have to continue abstaining long enough to see the difference. That's it for today's study, little ones. It's February 10th, 2024 of the Common Era. February, I want to say. 1947 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I do love you very much. This is, on my behalf, Liv Dusty. And this is Cassie saying bye for now.